Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering. Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins, and I head the abuse team at Hugh James. And today, we are joined by a survivor. That survivor is Nicole. Welcome, Nicole.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for agreeing to come on to this podcast. As I said, you're a survivor, and you are going to be talking to me in this podcast about your experience of the Crown Court, and in particular, two aspects. One, the making of a compensation order, and number two, you're going to tell us a little bit about a Goodyear hearing. And I suspect many of our listeners will not be familiar with what a Goodyear hearing is. I had to remind myself and do a little bit of reading up to make sure I got my facts right and make sure that I'm up to date on the law on all of this. But let's go over to you. And you were a witness in Crown Court proceedings. And perhaps you can tell us a little bit about your experience of a Goodyear hearing.
What happened in my case? My abuser was very elderly. And he was, in my opinion, pretending to have dementia. And in my opinion, again, he was using lots of tactics to string the court case along.
Yeah. So many listeners will be familiar with that. It's, you know, it's sort of delaying, as we see it, the inevitable. Let's string it out. Maybe something will happen and the case will go away sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah, so it was very frustrating for me. It was very stressful because he was very elderly and I was wondering if he would die before the conclusion of the court case. And then it all concluded very quickly. And what had happened is they'd had a Goodyear hearing where the defence had asked what the likely sentencing would be if he pleaded guilty.
Yes.
And when I heard this, I was absolutely furious because to me that sounded like an admission of guilt. Yep. And he could choose whether to plead guilty or not. As it happens, he did plead guilty once he'd heard he was going to get a 2-year suspended sentence and I was to be awarded £25,000.
So you had your Goodyear hearing, and the Goodyear hearing is where a defendant, through his or her lawyer, can get an indication from the judge as to the likely sentence if they pleaded guilty. And I think the judge doesn't necessarily have to give an indication, but if they do give an indication and then the person then pleads guilty to it that day or very quickly afterwards, then the judge has to follow that indication that he or she gave to the defendant. So that sounds as though that's what happened in your case. So the lawyer for your abuser wanted to find out from the judge what would happen if the client, the accused, the defendant, pleaded guilty. And the judge, presumably, from what you're saying, said, well, if he pleads guilty, I'm looking at a suspended sentence, a non-custodial sentence. And that's what happened.
Yes.
So before we talk about the criminal compensation order, what did you feel about this legal process? There you are, you're experiencing all of this, hearing all of this, your accuser is, through his lawyer, trying to establish his position with the judge. How did that make you feel?
To be honest, the whole thing was horrendous. I actually felt I was being abused again. Mm. Because basically he's taking back power. He's controlling everything that goes on. He's, by acting out that he had dementia, which I really don't think he had, everything was in his control again. And, to stop me getting justice, it was horrendous. It dragged on for ages. And
yes. So the focus of attention really had shifted from you, the witness, the victim, the survivor, to him. So all the focus of attention was on him, as opposed to the fact that at the receiving end of his crimes was a real life victim who was having to sit there and watch and listen to all of this.
Yes, definitely. And I was really frustrated because he was treated as a vulnerable person, which he was. However, I'm a little bit conflicted with this because I was vulnerable when he chose to abuse me. He didn't care at all. And yet, when he was vulnerable, he was given that extra support. And I found that quite hard, but of course it's right. I know in my heart it's right, but I found that a bit frustrating.
Yes. And then at the end of the process, and this is why I'm very interested to hear what you've got to say about this, the judge made a compensation order, because in my experience, compensation orders in these cases are so rare that you are actually the first person that I've ever come across who's had a criminal compensation order made in the Crown Court.
Yes, to be honest, when I went into my case, I knew very little about it. So for me, it was a learning process as I went on. I didn't know or expect anything. So it was a surprise to me. I'm a bit embarrassed to say I hit the roof. I was absolutely furious, because to have any money put on your abuse, to me, is very painful. Yes. It's priceless. Your childhood is priceless, and to have a monetary value put on it, to me, feels quite abusive. It feels like minimising. I now understand that my award was actually very high for the level of abuse that I suffered, but I was very, very angry. I was fuming. And the suspended sentence that he got 2 years suspended sentence. That's how long the court case took. And I felt that I'd had a 2-year suspended sentence. I'd been waiting for 2 years. I was so stressed, I couldn't even go on holiday. So for me, I was very unhappy with the sentencing. But as I understand it now, that's nothing to do with the judge. And it's all down to sentencing guidelines and compensation. And, you know, that's all already set.
Parliament makes these laws. So Parliament says that in all cases, the judge or the magistrate is supposed to consider compensation. And we find in cases of childhood sexual abuse, it is very, very rare for the judge on sentencing to order the abuser to pay compensation. It's supposed to happen, but doesn't happen. And this is an issue that I personally have tried to pursue to make sure it does happen. And maybe the Ministry of Justice and the Home Office are going to do something about it. Because I'm interested in what you're saying about how you felt that it made you feel angry. But the law is that abusers are supposed to compensate their victims. In many ways, I see it as artificial, but the law says it's supposed to happen. It's, you know, it's supposed to try and atone, if that is possible, maybe it's impossible, for the considerable harm that they've caused. But yet it made you feel angry. Do you still feel angry about it?
No, I don't. I think now the judge did a really great job. What he understood that I didn't understand, that my abuser was likely to die really soon. And he brought a close to the case very quickly. So I had acknowledgement. I had a conviction and acknowledgement. I understand that now, because he did die very soon afterwards. But I didn't understand that at the time. And I understand now that the award I got was a lot higher than other people would have awarded. So, yes, no, it feels very differently now. And I think, yes, he was very fair to me. And I'm very grateful for what he did, actually.
Right, well, that's interesting. And so if there were victims, survivors listening in to all of this, and you know, they would be, I'm sure, very interested in hearing what you have to say. What would you say to them if they were umming and ahhing about whether or not to get involved in the criminal process?
To be honest, I had the same thought myself. I did wonder a long time afterwards, because there was such a big price to pay. I lost my family through the court case, because it was a family member. They sadly supported the abuser. And so I'm not in touch with my family anymore. The court case was very, very stressful. I left my job soon afterwards. it was just awful, and affected my relationships as well. It was very, very traumatizing. However, I wouldn't go back and not do it. It was wonderful to get the acknowledgement of what he'd done, to make him, everybody knew what he'd done. My case was in the newspaper because of his age, and that was really wonderful. I know it's horrible to say, but it was very public shaming of what he'd done. Yes, it was very hard, but do I regret it? Not one bit.
Yes. So it's a road you had to travel down, and it's a road that was very difficult, obviously very painful, but it was a road that you felt that you had to travel down, and you've come through for your sort of destination, so to speak.
Yes, I don't regret it at all, but there was a very high price to pay. But for me, it was worth paying.
Yes.
But it was very, very hard. I won't deny that. And there are lots of things that could be done to make it better, to make it easier for victims.
And such as?
You know, well, it took a long time. And I know the report from the APPG, they had a lot of really good recommendations. Yes. For example, the ISBA, I can't remember
ISBA,
what that's
the ISBA, yes.
Yes, absolutely crucial, I would say. The report made quite a lot of recommendations, most of which I would agree with. So I think a lot can be done to make it better, though I would say it is still quite traumatising. It is difficult.
Can you, before we finish this podcast, explain to us what the judge said about making the compensation order?
What he said was he thought, because my abuser was already quite elderly, he thought that he might not live long enough for me to make a civil claim. And so that's why he made the award himself.
Right. OK. Well, yeah. So I understand why the judge did that. And it's obviously good that the judge did. But what concerns me, though, is that, you know, you go through a criminal case and then you're sort of expected to do another case on the back of it in order to get the compensation. You know, it seems a little bit topsy-turvy that, yeah, as I said, Parliament expects judges and magistrates to make compensation orders. And whilst we're dealing with Parliament, you mentioned when we were talking about the APPG, which is the parliamentary group that looks into survivor issues and child abuse issues and so on. I'm interested to see that you're familiar with the work of the APPG. So why were you sort of interested in what they're doing?
Because while I was doing my court case, I had so many things that I thought were difficult. I actually wrote them down because I thought, when it's finished, I want to campaign about these things. There were so many things I thought, this could be better, this could be better, of what is already a horrible experience. You know, there's some things you can't control, but some things you can. Yes. And there were lots of things that could be made better. And then lo and behold, this report comes out and most of the things were on the report.
Yeah. So if listeners are interested, if they go to the Hugh James website, they will see we've written up a piece about the APPG and its work. So, you know, if you're really interested, go to the website and have a read. So your experience of the criminal process, you obviously had dealings with the police, Crown Prosecution Service, court service. What was your feeling about the way that they looked after you?
I consider myself really lucky because in all cases, they were absolutely wonderful. The police, CPS and the court, everything was really good. I was treated really respectfully, but good. I know that not everybody has this experience.
Yes. So from your personal perspective, that side of things worked well. But what you found frustrating was the delay, the length of time and the shift in focus from the crimes allegedly committed to or were committed because there was a guilty plea. The shift from there to the welfare of the defendant.
Yeah, I had lots of complaints. Like, for example, there's a huge lack of information. I found most of the times, what happened a lot with me was my family were telling me what was going on. I was actually hearing from the defendant indirectly what was going on rather than hearing from the police or the witness care unit. Yeah, so I was updated more from my family than from the people who were supposed to tell me. And then the hearings were delayed and delayed, and then it would be another 6 weeks and it just seemed to go on forever. Another thing I found difficult was not having access to a barrister. And I understand why, but I felt, you know, the defendant can talk to his barrister, and I never had that chance because you're a witness. Yes. And sometimes I heard stuff and I thought, I want to talk to her, I want to tell her this.
Yes.
But of course you can't. So I really felt I was not in control at all, but actually I wasn't. I was a witness.
Yes, I think many a survivor will say that actually it's a bit of a shock, because you find that the process, the system, is revolving around the defendant and not the victim.
Yes.
The victim's a bit of a bystander in many ways.
Yeah, I felt powerless.
Yes.
You know, I felt it was my court case, but actually I understand it isn't. But yes. It felt, you know, the crime was against me, but I actually felt absolutely powerless in what was going on. Yes. So it's like watching something but not being part of it.
Yes.
Whereas I felt my grandfather, he had, he had access to a lawyer and everything, and he could manipulate things and move things. Mm. And I had nothing of that. So I found that difficult. There were lots of things that were difficult. I can't think of them at the moment. I have got a list.
You have got a list. Okay. Well, we may come back one day and have a look at your list. But at the end of the day, with all your insight and your experiences, as we said, this was a road that you had to travel down, and no matter the difficulties and the price that you've had to pay, you're glad, if that's the right word, that you did so.
Yes, I am. There are two things I would say. One was, it was just so nice to have been named and shamed. For me, that was probably having that acknowledgement and having him named, because I was pressured to keep quiet about what happened by my family for so long, to keep his respectability and keep the family name, and to have that absolutely shattered and the truth to be known was really, really powerful for me. It was, for me, that was probably the best justice. But the second thing was, as I did actually take a civil case afterwards, I wasn't happy. I didn't feel I had justice from the court case. So I did take a civil case afterwards, and it was during the civil case that he died, and I felt he died with me hanging over him. And the civil case, I took it because it wasn't because of the money, although that's always what people say about survivors. Someone said to me, he's going to think it's all over after the court case. And they said, imagine how he feels when he gets a letter saying this is round two. And that's exactly what happened. When he got the letter, he became very confused. He literally couldn't take it anymore. And it felt to me that he broke. And I felt I finally got power. That's when I felt I had power.
Right.
And then I felt, yes, I've had justice now. And he died a few weeks after that.
Right.
And then I was really pleased. I thought, yes, I finally had what I wanted. I didn't want to kill him or anything like that, but I felt that, no, justice has been served now. So,
and that's important. And I think that's the point where we can end, because at the end of the day, for each individual survivor, victim, it's about what justice means to them. And what we might think is justice is not necessarily what somebody else might think is justice. It's very, very personal. It's a very individual thing. That's my experience of working with people over the years. It's not a case of me telling people what justice is. It's about that person working out for themselves what justice actually means to them.
Yeah, well, I just felt at the end, I felt I had control. He literally couldn't take it anymore. And he was saying, just how much money do you want? He just wanted it to stop. And that's not, I didn't want the money. So I just said, no, leave the lawyers to sort this out. But for me, that was him basically breaking.
Mm.
And after he tried to break me when I was a child, I felt, no, you've lost control now. And yes, and that's, I'm very, very glad for that.
Well, thank you very much for taking part in this podcast. And I'm sure you've provided plenty of food for thought for our listeners. And I hope any victims or survivors out there listening in, that you've gained some insights as well as some strengths and some encouragement from this particular podcast. So once again, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favourite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.